Do you have a plan about what to do if and when you are confronted by the jackbooted thugs of the police state? Sadly, that isn't merely a hypothetical question.
It's not illegal to record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, why are you taking my information down?
Because we have a nice little database.
Oh, good.
And now you're considered a domestic terrorist. So.
We're videotaping you? Are you crazy?
Something that... we believe you've written on Facebook has upset someone.
You're here because somebody got upset. Is it against the law? Am I being arrested?
You're not being arrested.
Then what are you doing here?
My plan was, if you were admitting that it was you who wrote the comment, you could just make an apology to the person.
I'm not apologizing to anybody. Well, I can tell you that.
The alternative would be that I have to call you for an interview. I'm here to talk to you about the allegation. They've reported it to the police.
So what?
Police toss stun grenades into a crowd in Israel's Bnei Brak on Sunday as clashes broke out in the ultra-Orthodox city. Security forces arrested men who took to the streets over the army's efforts to recruit some of the community's members.
We are here today to fight against the whole draft that they want to draft all the Torah Jews into the army and make them become irreligious and make them lose their connection with God, which is the worst, which we believe is worse than death. We would rather die than serve in their army. The whole reason why they need us, they don't need more soldiers. There's no war in Gaza. They had enough people in Gaza. They don't need any soldiers. All they want is to make it that there shouldn't be any more religious Jews. They hate the Torah. They hate God. We are here to protest against them today.
Yes, the sad, unfortunate reality is that it doesn't matter whether you reside in Boston or Birmingham or Bnei Brak or anywhere else on this planet. There is the chance that you will be confronted by law enforcement officers for, well, a number of things, whether that's something as trivial as a social media post or something as non-trivial as standing up to enforced enslavement, aka enlistment in the IDF, or any other of a multitude of vast and important and perfectly defensible reasons for standing up for your rights. You may be confronted by law enforcement. And the question is, what do you do in such a situation? Well, one answer that presents itself, given the state, the literal physical state of law enforcement in America and various other places around the world, you could just try to plain old outrun them, and you may just win that race.
Leave me alone!
But you probably don't want to bet your life on that strategy, do you? So, again, the question comes back to, what can you do, what should you do when you are lawfully standing in your right as a free, sovereign human being and confronted by agents of the Epstein class, which of course is what the brutish thugs of the enforcement wing of the police state really are in this day and age. It's a valid question, a good question, and one that is not, of course, simple to answer, because you can do everything right and everything by the book, and you can follow the letter of the law, and you can still end up with a bullet in your head if somebody gets the wrong idea at some point about your interaction. So, let's take this question as seriously as it deserves to be taken, and let's start talking to people who have some experience with this. And first of all, we'll talk to someone who hopefully you will already be familiar with if you have seen my previous Solutions Watch from 2022 on auditing the police. If you have not seen that episode of Solutions Watch, and if you are on YouTube, you have not seen that episode of Solutions Watch, because that occurred when I was kicked off of YouTube. But anyway, it is there in the CorbettReport.com archives, and it is a wealth of information on this topic, and people who are out there not just passively asserting or standing in their rights, but people who are actively testing and making sure that the police are following their rules and procedures and the letter of the law. A dangerous activity at any time, but certainly so in 2026. But if you do cast your mind back to that podcast episode, you'll remember that I talked to Jason Bassler, who you will probably know, hopefully know, as the co-host of the Free Thought Project podcast. But hopefully you will also know that he is at jasonbassler.com, where you can learn more about not only this co-host of the Free Thought Project podcast, but the founder of Police the Police, someone who has been called one of the most extensive recorders of law enforcement misbehavior in America. He's also the creator of the Know Your Rights online seminar, teaching Americans how to understand the law, avoid the traps, outsmart the system. So, in the wake of recent events and masked ICE raids on snatching people off of the streets in the United States and all of the craziness that we are seeing at this time, I put the question to Jason, how can people effectively stand their ground legally when confronted by so-called would-be presumed authorities, without being killed?
Well, you know, that's a big question. That's a good question. You know, I usually say that the people that are looking for a fight or come dressed for a fight, you know, and that seems to be the case with the militarized police right now. So I would say that one of the most important things, you know, is to not be loud. You need to be smart, right? You need to be strategic with this kind of stuff. They're looking for a fight, as I was saying. And you know, that seems to be how they're trying to escalate things. So knowing your rights, knowing your limits, when you must identify yourself, when you don't have to, what you're required to do, what you're not required to do. Because, you know, rights on paper and then rights in the street are not always kind of the same thing. So you have to be smart about how you're going to assert your rights. You got to be calm, but firm. You know, you don't want to turn it into a showdown. And a lot of times, actually, you know, what I tell people in my Know Your Rights class here is that it's probably best that you don't have any interactions with the cops. Try to make yourself not be seen. The best interaction to have a cop is the one that never happens, right? So, you know, when you're doing the civil disobedience, the protests, the cop watching, the 1A audits, stuff like that, ultimately, and I hate to say this because I'm not trying to have, you know, a chilling effect here, but you are to a certain degree painting a target on your back. You don't want to be necessarily poking the bear, especially with like local law enforcement who can really make your life a living hell. So yeah, the state is certainly ramping up its enforcement of dissidents, you know, and we not only need to know our rights, but we have to kind of stay disciplined. We need to make sure that we're calm, we're coordinated, and really adhere to the nonviolent discipline of, you know, protest. No threats, no ego contests with cops, you know. All these things could get you into trouble. And I think I even heard at one point in like the late 2010s that people were doing these silent protests in different cities around the world. And I felt like that was a very unique type of protest, because ultimately when that happens, there isn't a lot of escalation. And a lot of times law enforcement can't escalate the situation without making themselves look bad. But to kind of continue my point here, I would say make sure you're surrounded with people who also know their rights, people who have cameras. There's safety in numbers, right? You have to be organized, go with a plan. Legal observers are always a plus, you know, have some type of emergency contact. And I think I've talked to you about this in our last Solutions Watch when we were talking about auditing, but, you know, have a lawyer, a contact number written on your body, not just in your phone. These are all kind of important things. And control your emotions. That was another thing I was just touching on there. But, you know, anger is obviously understandable at protests. But when you infuse your anger with adrenaline, when there's armed authority around, as I was talking about, who are kind of itching for some type of violent confrontation, it's certainly a dangerous mix. So, you know how to control yourself. Obviously, document everything. That's another big thing that, you know, we've seen more in the past 10 to 15 years now. Cameras seem to change police behavior, any type of federal employees, federal agents. Not always, but, you know, it's enough to kind of make a difference. So when you're able to document the situation, the shift, it goes from being a fight in the streets, and it could be something that you turn into a piece of content. And then at that point, the conversation moves to social media and blogs and video platforms and stuff like that. So it's not as dangerous, right? When there's police around and, you know, you're under scrutiny, probably not doing that and having that kind of confrontation in the middle of the street with armed law enforcement is probably a good idea. You could take these documentations. A lot of times the transparency, you know, shines a light on what's going on. It's certainly important. And, you know, we could use more of that, obviously. I mean, that's why a couple of these situations like Alex Preti and Renee Good turned into viral expressions across the internet because people saw what actually happened. You know, I would say also understand the risks when you get into situations like this. These situations are inherently high risk. You know, there's a heavy police presence, there's militarized police, escalated crowds. And this kind of gets into like the situational awareness. You know, you got to know when it's time to stand your ground, when it's time to retreat. I know firsthand, I've been pepper sprayed. It's not fun. That's probably the least of, you know, the inflict violence that could have been inflicted on me. But nevertheless, even pepper spray is not fun. But I would say, you know, just choosing your battleground wisely is the last part here. There's one thing to have a confrontation in the streets with like protests. But when you have the strategic pressure through content, through social media, through things like journalism, even agorism, that's a more effective route, in my opinion. And, you know, it's not, and I think our leftist friends kind of get this wrong sometimes, because it's not just about how we resist in the streets, right? It's about the other forms of civil disobedience and noncompliance that oftentimes could be even more effective than just protest.
I definitely want to get into that with you. But before we do, unfortunately, we can all think of and name various examples that have gone viral of these types of confrontations that go wrong in various ways. But how about the flip side of that? Are there either people, organizations, or specific incidents that you can point to as an example of, hey, that's how this type of situation should be handled?
Yeah, I mean, I already mentioned it and referred back to our previous conversation, and maybe some of your audience could check that out. Maybe you could even link it, James. But yeah, the First Amendment auditors, these guys generally are more professional in their approach to how they handle law enforcement. Oftentimes, these guys actually know the laws and know how to interact with police better than the average normie and even cop watchers, because this is something that they do for a living. Most of these people have lucrative YouTube channels, and they make big money by basically going around to their own city, their own towns, different precincts, different post offices, any type of government business, police department, and they test the waters. They actually test to see if the local law enforcement, government employees know the laws. And I've learned a lot, certainly just by watching them, how to interact with police, how to navigate a hot-headed officer who does have a chip on their shoulder. And a lot of times, James, let me tell you, it's just about acknowledging their authority first. That is the biggest part that seems to be the trigger, the linchpin, if you will, if you're going to have a positive or negative experience and have a good or bad day with these law enforcement employees. So I would point to the First Amendment audit community. They are probably the best expression. There's quite a few. I mean, it's not even hard to find them anymore. They have viral videos all over places like YouTube. But yeah, that would probably be the example to point to.
Once again, that is Jason Bassler of jasonbassler.com. And I hope that people who are interested will take a look at Jason Bassler's Know Your Rights seminar, or at least interested Americans should take a look at that for more details about what your rights are and how you can stand in them effectively. But I think some of the points that he raises there are extremely important to underline. First of all, well, obviously, you have to know your rights in order to stand in your rights. So having some familiarity with the law, at least as it is written down and enforced in your local neck of the woods, seems like it would be a prudent thing to have at your disposal. And secondarily, I think he makes an extremely important point that if you go looking for a fight, you are more likely to get a fight. And if you are smart about it and not looking for a fight, you can more effectively avoid the fights. That does not mean, of course, that you are safe, that you are protected, that everything will go all right. But anyway, the point stands. The more you are looking to generate an argument or a fight with a police officer or law enforcement officer, the more likely you are to get into such an altercation. And that can go very wrong very quickly. So it is probably something that you want to avoid to the extent possible. And it's important to keep in mind, we are not simply talking about going out actively in some sort of protest, really confronting and provoking law enforcement. We're talking about all sorts of situations that can arise in your daily life. And it can happen. And unfortunately, it does happen. So that is why it behooves you to know something about your local law enforcement situation and how others have dealt with these types of situations in the past. If you are in America, you might want to look into and examine some of the details of, for example, if you are stopped by masked brigands on the street demanding your identification, what can and should you do in that situation? You better be studying those examples. If you're in the UK, you might want to be studying the examples of the many, many, at this point, tens of thousands of people who have been questioned, if not outright arrested by authorities for having the temerity to make a post on social media, as is increasingly common phenomenon. Or if you're in Israel and an ultra-Orthodox Jew trying to resist conscription into the IDF, you better know the examples of people who have been doing that in the past and what has resulted from that those types of protest activities. Or if you're in Ireland, well, maybe you want to know a little bit more about our next guest's experience. And our next guest may be familiar to some in my audience as the editor-writer of The Globalist Gazette, a satirical Substack, which takes a sort of onion-esque approach to independent media. And I think creates some humorous headlines that you might enjoy. And maybe you've been familiar with The Globalist Gazette. But who is the man behind that? It's not Charles Foster Kane, as he dubs himself on the Globalist Gazette masthead. It is Seamus O'Lee, an ordinary average Irishman who, well, he had his own tumbling down the rabbit hole experience back on March 15th, 2021, when he was kidnapped by a shopkeeper and had the guards called in on him for the temerity of going out and attempting to purchase a beer at an off-license. That's a liquor store for Americans in the crowd, without wearing a mask.
How's it going? I'm in O'Donovan's off-license on Summerhill, and I've been forcibly kept inside the shop here, and the man here is ringing the guards.
Correct.
So this is
hello.
Kidnap.
Can I get the guards, please, to O'Donovan's office in Summerhill, please?
This is false arrest and kidnap.
Yes, Summerhill, please.
So this is
that's
going...
Right, just up from McGurk
This
Street.
Is going live out to YouTube.
I have a fellow here who actually assaulted me.
So this...
I locked the door, so he's actually locked in the shop.
He said I assaulted him. I tried to get out of the shop.
Paul, are you so the shop?
He's saying that I assaulted him. I was just trying to get out of the shop.
Inside.
Yes, that is the scene that unfolded at the off-license there in March of 2021 in locked down Cork, Ireland, where, of course, you cannot enter the off-license without a mask, according to at least the shopkeeper. Although, interestingly, when the entire story played out, of course, the guard, that is the Irish police, were called in and did question Seamus O'Lee for having not worn the mask. Although, interestingly, they weren't interested in hearing Seamus's complaint about being kidnapped, being forcibly confined in the store. But anyway, once the guard had come and interviewed him, what eventually happened was a fine that included a summons. And Seamus actually went to court to represent himself there, and the guard in question did not show up in court, and it was ultimately thrown out, as such a case would be, should be, in any ideal universe, should be. But then again, in an ideal universe, none of this would have taken place in the first place. But that is an example of somebody who did stand up for their rights and was ultimately vindicated. Although, of course, as they often say, you can beat the rap, but you can't beat the ride. And this is perhaps a case study in that. So what the other, I think, more important part of what eventuated from this was also a book. It's called Tales from the Lockdown. The subtitle is One Man's Experiences Through One of the Strangest Periods in Human History. It is by Seamus O'Lee. It is available at talesfromthelockdown.com. And you can read through it for more anecdotes, stories, and experiences from the crazy days of the scamdemic. Do you remember those crazy days? Because they were not so long ago, and they are a perfect case in point, an example of why it does behoove us to understand, to know a little bit about these confrontations or encounters with various law enforcement authorities and how it could come to you for doing something as simple as refusing to don the mask. So, in that context, I had the chance recently to talk to Seamus Olley about his experience. I've started by asking him about what happened on that day, how he handled it at the time, and given his retrospective conclusions, how would he have handled that if it was happening today?
So I had the silly idea of going into this off-license where I did know that the guy was starting to get, you know, I would buy a bottle of beer or two a week. And I might pop into this particular off-license, and I knew the guy was getting a bit more insistent because of the previous time I had been in, and I just thought, okay, look, I'd bypass this by having the right amount of change in my hand. I know how much the beer costs. I'll get a couple of bottles, I'll leave the change on the counter, and just like that, that'll solve that problem. And he can just say to his boss, who's given him grief, this difficult customer came in, and he just put the money on the counter and he walked out, and what could I do? But no, he decided to lock me in. No, like the things that lined up for this to happen, like there was nobody else in the shop. There was only one door out, which he went over to lock. He didn't adhere to social distancing at all, I must say, which I was very disappointed with. And it was just a power trip. Yeah, I suppose basically a power trip. And he locks me in, and the constabulary, he phoned the state enforcers, and in his phone call, he kind of casually mentions that I assaulted him, and I pointed out that I didn't assault you on camera. That seemed to have like gone by the wayside. That accusation was dropped, funny enough. The police never picked it up. They never asked, okay, this accusation of assault, did this happen? No, there's no mention of that. They proceeded to, I mentioned that, I think being locked in, being incarcerated against my will is a crime. Is that, you know, should we talk about that? No, the mask is more important. What's your details? I gave them my details, and then they asked me who my doctor is, and I was kind of going, what? Of course they had no authority to ask that question, but I didn't know the ins and outs of it at the time. But I looked up the Barrington Declaration on my phone, and the guard, you know, the guard, as we call them, no, nothing like a guard. They don't guard much except the mega corporations in the country. But I was looking up the Barrington Declaration, and Professor Kulldorff, the head of Harvard Medical School, I think it was Harvard Medical School, was my doctor. He was my doctor because I listened to him. And so I told them that Professor Kulldorff, and they were asking me, they were writing it down, and it was like, how do you spell that? K-U-L-D-O-R-F-F. And where is he based? Harvard Medical School. Harvard Medical School. Head of Harvard Medical School, actually. And then they dropped that line of questioning because, like, it wasn't. So there's your non-compliance.
He's locked me into the shop. This is false arrest.
Yes, he wouldn't.
This is kidnapping.
He's not getting solved because he wouldn't wear a mask. So he tried to take two bottles, leave the money on the counter, and push past me, but I wouldn't allow it.
Let's see what happens here now.
So in retrospect, how do you rate your March 15th, 2021 performance? What did you do right? What could you have done better? What would you do differently? And what advice would you give to people who are in that sort of situation today in the post-lockdown world?
Yeah, okay. So if I was in that situation again, I mean, I think I absolutely did the right thing. Happened to have a phone where I could video the situation. I think I can't kind of, I think I got that bit right. I was calm. I didn't get into any major arguments. I mean, I tried to get out of the shop and it didn't work, but I wasn't going to push the guy because that would have been perfect for him. So none of that. I stayed in my zone and, but one thing I would have done, I would do now if I was in a situation like that, is I would, when the enforcers arrive, my attitude is, okay, everything stops here. I bring proceedings to a halt and I say, okay, kind of flip the tables on them and go, in your mind, you're the authority. You're the authority in this situation because you're in lawful position. They are generally in a non-lawful position. And so you start, first of all, record. And if you had no electronic device on you, you either you demand a notebook and a pen. I need a notebook and a pen. If you don't have them on you, before I proceed, because I need this for my defense. And so you have your whatever recording device you have or notebook. You start off, okay. Are you aware I'm recording this? Yes or no? Okay. What's your name? What's your badge number? Where are you stationed? Who's your superintendent? Okay. And so in as much as you can calmly explain the situation to them and just, you know, explain that, look, I'm doing this for my defense. And, you know, you could say, well, this is also for your protection, but I wouldn't get into that. And just proceed normally. And you need to ask them, okay, first of all, am I under arrest? And you need to tell me under what law you're arresting me. So you have your notebook and this is your kind of authority, this is your statement of authority here. And so you ask them, okay, so what law are you arresting me under? At that point, they probably can't even answer the question. So it's like, no, sorry, I can't proceed. Like this isn't happening now because I cannot proceed. You cannot arrest me if you can't tell me why you're arresting me. Again, it's all down to attitude, that you're in a lawful position and you carry that through all the procedure. You stick with that. It's like, I'm in a lawful position. Everything you're doing is unlawful. So I'm just going to go from that position, and that's the best I can do, you know, and make all your decisions based on that.
Once again, that is Seamus O'Lee of Tales from the Lockdown.com. I hope you will take a look at his writing on this subject, because it is an interesting case study in what can eventuate in these types of encounters. And I think he has some valuable advice about these types of encounters, specifically recording, if not with a device, although hopefully with some way of actually recording the encounter itself, at the very least, of course, noting down exactly what is happening as it is happening. And if there is a common denominator behind all of these encounters that we see and have seen here today or will see in the future, it is that they are being recorded, and that it can make the difference in a variety of contexts between having your rights completely trampled over and having some of your rights respected, at least in retrospect. And we can look at many examples of that. For example, in Seamus's own experience, you will notice that the shopkeeper was attempting to accuse him of assault for trying to violently leave the store. But he whipped out the phone and was recording and could show that there was no such assault taking place. So that wasn't even raised when the guard ultimately came, because the shopkeeper realized that there was no actual, there was certainly no evidence of it. And in fact, evidence that that was not taking place. So again, recording can be an extremely valuable tool in these types of situations. But let's go back to what Jason Bassler was saying earlier, that the best way to deal with these types of encounters is not to have them at all. Again, this, I want to underline and stress, the point of today's episode is not about going out there and actively provoking or seeking to confront law enforcement, or to actively and deliberately break laws in a brazen way and then dare the authorities to do something about it. That is not the point that I am making. That is not what I am talking about, at least not here today. What I am talking about is the ways that you can protect yourself by standing in your rights in these times. And of course, as I've been saying, this is not a foolproof method, and it does not guarantee that you will come out of these encounters unscathed or even necessarily alive. And that is something, again, we have to take very seriously. Anytime you are stepping into this realm, you are stepping in with people who are armed and can take your life at a moment's notice. So do not take these types of encounters lightly. Having said that, again, as always, the best way that we can live our lives is not to live in some sort of constant state of aggressive confrontation with the authorities. It is to continue the hard and often thankless work of building up the resilient communities that will be able to not just resist or confront the police state, but to completely and utterly detach ourselves from it, or at least to the extent that that is possible. And as often people will say, well, if you do that, if you build your little community, they will come after it. And it is at that point that you need to know how to stand your ground. But I think the more important part of this, the long-term bigger picture of this, is not about creating the violent confrontation and some sort of war that is going to take place. It is about building up a thriving community that other people will want to join, that will be the example that that ultimately changes the equation for whether or not people will ultimately choose to live under the jackbooted thugs of the police state and the Epstein enforcer class, or in the thriving communities of the future. And it's on that somewhat more positive and hopeful note that I also talked to Jason Bassler, talking about his vision of how the agoristic societies of the future can function to create the space for free individuals to function without the need for aggressive confrontation of the enforcers.
Agorism, as you pointed out, is one of the important things, the black and gray markets, you know, how we build parallel institutions and societies. What that does is it reduces dependence on the state, right? We don't want to be feeding the beast. We don't want to be continually participating with it. We don't want to have any interaction with it if possible. So what agorism does, what black and gray markets does, is it shifts the power from protest to production. And at a big enough scale, it could actually be economically viable. And I think that's the idea of what we're trying to say when we want black and gray markets, is we want a scale which will span the vast parallel institutions, parallel industries, all these different things that will rise off the back of the state without its participation, without its knowledge, hopefully. And I think what that does is it really reveals what actually creates value in society. We're told that taxation produces these services in society. But when you start to look at that, what does that mean? Well, that means it's all the things that are undesirable in society, like the war state, like the largest prison population in the world, like subsidies, all these things get funded by taxation. So if we can move away from that with parallel economies, turn non-compliance into more of a lifestyle than like a moment, because it's not just a form of resistance that's just one-time confirmation, right? It's about replacing the whole system by itself. So moving into more of like the pragmatic ideas, voting with our dollars, right? Voting with our lifestyle, voting within a way that is practical for everybody, that doesn't actually include the state. And this kind of goes tied hand in hand with the black and gray markets. But this ultimately kind of disempowers the corporations, the cronyism, and empowers us morally. So I think that's a very important thing to do. Our friend and colleague, Derek Brose, talks a lot about the idea of exit and build. Exiting the system, it basically is withdrawing your consent. And I know it sounds maybe like going off grid or something like that. That's not exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just exiting the idea of participation within the system. And by doing this, it avoids the escalation of other types of avenues of protest or noncompliance. You're not attacking anybody. You're just not participating, right? You're just opting out. And this kind of goes hand in hand as well with building the parallel industries and networks. Because when there's alternatives, compliance becomes optional. We don't have to participate when there's viable alternatives that are accessible to the layman, to the everyday person. And with that said, I think, again, this kind of goes with the mutual aid networks. Of course, the mutual aid idea is something that seems to be kind of couched in like a leftist sentiment, but I think it's equally as important because what the mutual aid does, it fulfills these basic needs, right? It makes people more independent, less dependent on the state. It builds trust. It builds solidarity, which obviously we need in our societies and our communities. It feels like that's not something that we really have right now. And a lot of that might be the dependence on the state, because when you get down to brass tacks, you know, there might be a situation or a time when your neighborhood has to come together. So I think the more that we could have these mutual aid networks for that purpose specifically, it does provide the safety nets against the enforcement consequences, against what the state could possibly do to penalize you, right? And it does create a certain level of autonomy. It gives us options and self-reliance.
Once again, that is Jason Bassler of jasonbassler.com and the Free Thought Project podcast. And I think those are some interesting words of wisdom. First, parallel economies turn noncompliance into more of a lifestyle than a moment, which is an important way of looking at this, because yes, we can get fixated on those moments of confrontation with authorities, with officers of the law, etc. And we can get very fixated on that idea that this is a moment that must be a confrontation, some sort of decisive battle, as it were, whether literal or metaphorical. But realistically, the only thing that is going to change our actual material conditions of existence in the long run are the structures of control, which govern not just us, but also the enforcers of the kakistocracy. Those people too are in a system. And the point is to build up the parallel systems through which we can thrive without dependence on the state, and thus hopefully actually change our entire lifestyle, not just live in defiance for some moment, for some viral video, but to actually change our lifestyles. That's an important part of this. Also, I think Jason made an excellent point. We don't have to participate when there are viable alternatives. Exactly right. If there are no viable alternatives, participation is mandatory. Like it or not, you either participate or you die. You will just starve to death if you don't participate in the system. If there are agoristic communities providing parallel economies and different ways of interacting with people around you that do not require paying your tithes to the state, Well, that is something that we should be building up and fostering and working towards. And I think that, again, that fosters that lifestyle of defiance and noncompliance rather than a moment of viral noncompliance, however that moment may or may not end. So that's the bigger picture of what we're really talking about today, not simply living for some brave confrontation with law enforcement, but living in a lifestyle that will be the living embodiment of the example of what we want on the bigger societal scale moving forward. Some big ideas, to be sure, and there's a lot of granular detail here. So, of course, as always, these show notes will contain the links to all of the guests and all of the various clips that we've looked at and different things that we've talked about today. But I am more interested in what you have to say about this. So as always, if you're a Corbett Report member, you are invited to log into CorbettReport.com and leave your thoughts on this subject in the comment section there at the Corbett Report. In the meantime, I am James Corbett, looking forward to talking to you again in the near future. The Corbett Report is 100% listener supported. Join the Corbett Report community to become a member and log into CorbettReport.com to read the subscriber newsletter, featuring my weekly editorial, recommended reading and viewing, discounts on Corbett Report merchandise, and once a month, a subscriber exclusive video. Sign up today at CorbettReport.com/members and help support this independent media.